Hello and welcome to the Business Addicts Podcast. Today I have Brad Herta here as a guest, and I met Brad a couple of years ago. We were in a room together at an event with multiple entrepreneurs, and I was curious who helps with that next generation of businesses, and come to find out Brad Herta's name came up. So as we talk about family businesses and bring together, you know, different resources for our family business owners, Brad came to mind. And so, Brad, I'd love for you to share a little bit of what you do and how did you get into this? Was it a calling or did you sort of fall into it? What was the, what's the story?
So, when I was working for Bucyrus International back in the day, I had lots of family business owners as my suppliers. So I was in the outsourced manufacturing. So I got to meet the owners of fabrication shops, gear shops, welding shops, machine shops, all those things. And most of them are family owned because we dealt with a lot of small, that's who we wanted to deal with. We didn't want to deal with the big conglomerates and just be another number. We wanted to create those relationships. And one of my suppliers was given a proposition by his workforce, and he ended up shutting his business down and vacating all those jobs and then traveling the country for 10-12 years looking for work. And who wants to hire a second generation business owner as an employee? And so that's my purpose, is to not have to have somebody go through that gives and gives and gives and gives and gives to be at the end of the rope, end of their line that they want to do something with, to not have the opportunity. And the way he ran his opportunity, his business, the dollars were probably there if he had somebody in his corner to help him look at his business differently and think about things and try those things and get over some of those fears and anxiety of, well, this is the way I've always done it. Why would I try this differently? That was my purpose. He was the purpose. When I left the corporate world, I had no idea this profession even existed. And I'm blessed to be able to work with businesses through that transition, through exit, through sell, through whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish. Because sometimes you put the kids in place and they don't want it, but they're doing it because they want to make their parents proud and they're unhappy and it's a mess. So let's get that on the table sooner rather than later, you know?
It's interesting what you said about not knowing that this profession exists, because I kind of didn't know that either before Kevin and I sort of, we listened to a book and I was like, Kevin, whatever they're doing, I want to do that. I didn't know it was a thing. So when you say that that kind of drives you and you left the corporate world, one of the other things that I talk about is the difference between corporate and family business. And can you speak a little bit to the language that you had to learn? Like, was there a transition for you coming outside of corporate and going into family business or not really?
It wasn't really a transition because I was speaking to those individuals all the time in a very plain language, very plain, you know, we weren't talking in acronyms and different things. And, you know, the biggest difference is typically on the financial side where those things are happening. And then potentially on some of the, because I deal mostly blue collar work, it's the process. It's how do we do these things? It used to be, you know, dad yells at George, George go takes care of it. And now Aaron's coming in as a young individual and Aaron doesn't know shit. And it's like, now they're all pissed off. Well, hey, you need a process. You need something. You just can't yell at each other and say, go get it done anymore. That's not how it works.
So I didn't hear you say anything like it's a little bit more emotional or a little bit more dramatic, but you kind of shared the story.
it does, but it doesn't always, because in the corporate world, it's, at least where I came from, which was Bucyrus, was very entrepreneurial, very, and then when we were acquired by Caterpillar, it was very, process driven and less entrepreneurial. So there was emotion there. There was drama there. There was lots of different things within fighting. And it's like this department versus that department. Mm-hmm. The family business side is slightly different because it's mom and dad and it's one brother versus another brother or sibling versus sibling or aunt versus uncle, whatever. It's all there. And my goal is always to make sure that Thanksgiving dinner, Christmas, birthdays, holidays, weddings are going to be enjoyable and work on that separation of business and family. And that's often very complicated, but that's one of the first places I like to start, is let's separate these things out. I was with a client probably about a month and a half ago. We're working on trying to separate those things, get them to understand that ownership, the equity side of it versus the board of directors versus operational are three different tiers of your business, and being able to separate those. And we got into a conversation about how dad calls the son who's running the business every day. And I asked him the question. I said, are you calling him because you are wanting to know about the business? You're calling there to be helpful, or are you calling him to every day just to be dad? Because he doesn't know why you're calling. He just sees his phone blink every day and going, oh my, you know, so all the stress. And he's like, probably calling just to be dad. Good. How about you guys set up a time? If you want to call to be dad at these times. If it's anything between these hours, it's about business. So that way there's the son has the ability to run the business, do the things without having to worry about, oh my God, dad's calling. And now I got to jump through hoops because it's the most important thing on my plate, when really he's just calling to be supportive more than anything else.
That's huge. I'm really glad that you point that out. I remember getting calls like that, and often it was like therapy calls. Like I was the therapist on staff, you know, like whatever hat I need to wear for the day. And if dad was calling, then sometimes it was the therapy hat. So,
right. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if that, but just be very clear on what your intentions are. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be, if you're calling as the primary equity owner of the business and you want to talk about business, great. If you're there to be mm-hmm. a supportive parent, just separate it out. So the kids understand why, because every time the phone rings, we all have that emotional reaction.
Yeah.
And if you're calling every day, typically that reaction is going to be, now what?
So in my story, I think that the first time I was fired was a couple years in, you know, and then I wanted to fire on the other side, maybe a couple years in. So we had what we called a bonfire every once in a while, every time okay. it seemed like I was being fired. Did you ever have, do you ever have family businesses that are, you know, fired multiple times, but they're still there, they're staying?
There's some interesting things going on right now with a few that are, I can't really get into the details on.
Right.
That are dynamic, but yes, you have to, there's always a lot of times, I shouldn't say always, many times there's the one sibling or the one person that is the black sheep or the rebel or the whatever it is and doesn't want to follow the rules. In trying to get that coordinated, understand that it's a team, it's a business, it's a thing. Just because you won the last name lottery doesn't mean mm-hmm. you get to do whatever it is that you want to do, because there's another 40, 50, 80 families depending upon this business for their livelihood, and really work to make sure that they understand that. And we do a lot of work on core values in many cases, and getting them to speak to those things on a regular basis and change the language and change their vernacular to act like business owners, not like it's a hobby, not like it's, oh, it's family business. I just come and do what I want.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
great when you were 12 and 13. You're now 38. We need to move forward. Can we please?
So I know you do a lot of work with multi-generational, and your podcast kind of speaks to some of that. What are some of the challenges that you see right now in the multi-generational piece? Are you primarily educating the younger generation or struggling with the older generation? Like, where's it going?
It's both sides. It's all typically about communication and expectations. As humans, if we set expectations, we typically do not want to disappoint. And if we set those expectations clearly and we can get them agreed upon, things tend to work out better and allows the employer and the employee or family member and family member to have a conversation that is rooted in expectations and not emotion. Hey, it is expected that you take care of this activity or this process or this thing once a month. Did you do it or you not do it? Well, I didn't want to. Okay. If you don't want to do it, then we have to go through that process of like any other business of what do? How do we escalate? What do we have to make happen? And I've had several entities in the past where that individual family member, they were no longer going to be part of the operational portion of the business. You can still have equity. You can still have the right name. You can still have ownership, but you're having zero to do with the operations. And oh, by the way, we structure it so that way the upside, if you're not involved, you're capped, right? So you get diluted over time. so much versus being part of the growth process. And make that very clear to them, to point that out and get those families to work with the appropriate counsel to write those agreements and write the buy sells and do the things that make sense. So it's not just a birthright, it's an actual transaction. And we try to separate that as much as we can.
Do you ever see where business owners are in that 59, 60, maybe early 60s range, and they're not ready to retire like they thought maybe they were going to be?
All the time. And it's not a good situation typically.
No.
Because they don't have a plan. They don't have an opportunity. And usually it's because they don't know what's next.
Well, their identity becomes the business. I mean, it happens easily.
Has been the business, right? So That's one of the big differences. And I had this conversation on one of my board meetings with a family. It's like, we got to the HR section of the board meeting, and we're talking about turnover. And I said, you need to get some turnover rate numbers that you want to have for this business so we can understand if we're doing good or bad. And dad goes, well, that turnover doesn't really matter. Those are all the young kids that just come in and they don't show up and they just go away. I'm like, what do you mean it doesn't matter? If you have open positions and you're turning it over, it's costing the business a crap ton of money, and you need to know that. He's like, well, they don't want to work. It's okay. The older guys, they just stay. They just work. I said, okay, but if they're also a pain in the ass and they're also not doing the thing, why are you keeping them? He goes, well, because they're good welders. I'm like, maybe that's why you have your turnover on this other end, is because you're not getting the folks that have been there for a while and holding them accountable to be good humans, to teach and educate and set expectations. And maybe there's hazing. Maybe there's stupidity going on and things that shouldn't be done in that world that aren't going to allow people to come in and be successful. And he kind of looked at me like I was like a deer in headlights. I'm like, no, dude, just, you need to trust me on this. It is important. We need to have people come to work regardless of a generation, and COVID accelerated this. And the millennials had it right. They went about it the wrong way. COVID has validated their belief that there needs to be a work-life balance, and we need to have and come to work for a sense of purpose, not for a sense of survival or security. And businesses that take that approach of, hey, we're here as a sense of community and have a purpose versus you're here to collect a check, will outperform, outmaneuver, and outsucceed those that are just out there to give people money to do tasks along the way. And too often the family business looks at it as, well, I'm paying George over there to come in and do a task. It's my business. They're just here. And they get lost and they can't find they're not willing to make the changes to bring in different talent pool because George grew up with them and they're all in the same mindset and they're all in the same vernacular. Well, at the end of the day, George is going to take care of him and his family, and he's going to dump all over you at some point because he's got to go take care of his thing.
You're speaking the language I'm familiar with, Brad. This is the things that I heard in the construction industry, and like what you just pointed out about the vernacular being the same. It's like an echo chamber. And so then they've decided that what they're saying is fine because, you know, they're colleagues and friends in that same generation and age bracket agree. So then everything must be fine. And I actually see it from a different perspective. And I think that's what you're pointing out is that those next generations see it differently, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be that it's wrong.
Right. The advancement of technology has made the greatest impact in what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nobody wants to sit around at a job site or at work to get there at 6:30 in the morning to not have to do something till 9 o'clock. No one wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're 18 or 58.
Right.
You got other things you could be doing with your time. And COVID accelerated that big time to go, oh, okay, well, why is that a problem? Well, then figure out how you do your safety talks, figure out how you do your morning meetings, and figure out something to do with those 2-3 hours of productivity to bring a sense of purpose other than just sit around and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when you're in some of these family meetings and it's a little bit emotional or dramatic, or maybe a sibling needs to be fired? What are some of the things that come up, and how do you, you know, how much do you like to be in the middle of those things?
I try to bring it back to facts of what's there. I've got one company right now, they're bringing back a family member that was vacated the business because of some emotional behavior, performance, entitlement, whatever it might look like. And they've decided, you know, more or less the siblings agreed, hey, this is great, go get some other outside experience, cool, and come back when you're ready. Parents are like, nope, no. He's coming back to like now, because the wasn't willing to take the initiative to go find something. So we're just going to, and since we're on payroll anyhow, we might as well get some value out of it, which is the other part about it. It's like, oh my gosh, at some point you got to cut the cord and make them earn the opportunity. But it's like, okay, you guys made this decision. Cool. So how do we make sure that when he comes back, it's the emotion is gone? So it's really setting up again those expectations. Here's the things that you need to do. Here's what the timeline looks like. Here are what not being an asshole means, right? You can't just say that, because you got to define what that means so everybody else understands what it looks like inside the organization, because there's a bias already from the rest of the organization. So you need to be very clear to all the other employees as to what success looks like, not only for the individual coming back on the one-on-one, but the rest of the organization. How does the shop floor know what success looks like with the sibling coming back into the business? What does the office look like for success with the sibling coming back into the business? So they can all be the eyes and ears and help that accountability piece become solid and strong, not just, well, I don't like him, so I'm just going to tell him all the time that he's wrong. Well, no, you can't do that either. And it really tests the leadership skills of the family, of the person in charge. And typically, most family second generation leaders, they worked in the business as well, very young. Maybe they went off to school, but they have no other outside experience. They've only seen what's been done with mom and dad. And that's where we come in to create that support opportunity and go, hey, have you thought about this? No. Okay, we'll try it, see what happens. Oh, that worked out well. Thank you very much.
You bring up two points that I'd like to kind of touch on. So the one is the family and sort of this idea of enabling. I mean, like ultimately, when I was working with Kevin in our marriage and he had an addiction, I was an enabler. I identified as a problem solver. And so then I was doing that same thing in the family business. I mean, again, I identified as a problem solver, but ultimately I didn't hold people accountable. You know, I whatever was thrown at me, it was like, just bring it on. You know, the more, the merrier.
Dad's not going to do it, so I got to go do it. Well, what would happen if you didn't do it? Well, it wouldn't get done. Well, then it would look bad to our customers and we wouldn't get our invoices out on time. Okay, but whose cash flow is going to be impacted? Dad's. So why are you worried about dad's cash flow?
Oh, man. That was so tough to separate that.
Yes, like, it is.
It's Brad, really, I can feel it now. You're bringing it back up.
It's very complicated and it's emotional and the business side versus the family side. That's why we try to really focus on setting those three things apart as to, hey, we have family, which is ultimately the highest thing. Then we have our equity ownership. Then we have the board leadership side of it. Then we have operations. And all those things need to be separate. And too often we put them into one big can of goo and we don't take the time to separate them out.
Yeah. And what you're speaking to also, like, I was measuring things based on how I thought, you know, like, what is the expectation here? Like you said, that wasn't clear. So I created, it's not that it wasn't clear. I didn't necessarily like what the expectation was. So I created my own, right. You know, his expectation of me was that I would watch the money. And I said, I don't know how to watch the money without leading. And I don't know how to watch the money without creating processes and knowing what's going on in all the departments. And he was like, whatever. That doesn't make any sense to me, but if you want more work, fine. I'm not asking you to do that. I don't want you to work that much. I just want you to watch the money. I was like, right. I'm confused.
Right. It's a simple T account. Money in, money out. Hey, expenses. Mm-hmm. What? Hey, no, don't go. No, we're not doing that. Oh, we're doing this. Okay, great. Yes. And that was, and that's some of the things that you have to get through to find the right opportunities for people. And there's a very strong, I have a very strong belief that people, their behavior styles put them in a spot that they're going to be more successful than others inside of an organization. And leveraging, just because you're a family member and you think you should be running the company at a, as a leadership, potentially your son or daughter, but that doesn't mean they're a good leader. That doesn't mean they're going to run it well. They may be better off behind the scenes sitting in process control or wherever, because they don't want to be out in front. And you can create opportunity to, you know, too often we get ownership and operational leadership mixed up, and they have to be the same thing, and they don't have to be. They can be different. Yeah. And they can, I have one company right now where they've got, it's family business. It's two brothers, two sons of one brother are in between, but they've got a third, a person, an intermediary in between there to cover the gap, because that's the other thing that's happening in today's world, is the age gap between parents and children has widened. You know, when I was growing, right, my dad, I think, is 21 years older than I am. So if he's 60, then I'm 40. So coming in and run a business to be at 40, no big deal. But now that's a 30-year gap. So if you're 58 and now you're only 28, that's a really hard sell to your customers and your suppliers and things like that. So you've got to have that planning process needs to be significantly stronger in order to create that opportunity for somebody to vacate sooner rather than later.
So again, going back to the idea of the enabling piece, do you run into businesses where there are people that are dealing with addictions or dealing with mental health issues, you know, with some of the kids in the family, and yet they're still leaving them on payroll, or they're still, know, really trying to. Yeah. You said yes.
Yeah, because yeah, absolutely. Because it's the too often. I've seen too often where that mom and dad who owns the business, they want to be the solution provider instead of, you made these decisions. Here's what you need to do to go rectify those decisions. And oh, by the way, this is what that's going to look like. Because they're often difficult, often complicated, and often, well, we'll take care of ourselves because we don't want anybody else to know about it. We want to keep this hush-hush. We want to keep this in the family, so to speak. Well, you can keep it in the family, but it impacted your business. So let's just be truthful and honest about it, because everybody on the shop floor, everybody else, they all know. They all see it. They're not stupid.
No.
And by you doing what you're doing, all it does is create that sense of doubt in your own ability to lead. When you decide you want to make change, it's going to be, yeah, you've tried, it's over and over. It's like flavor of the day type thing. Oh, it's just going to change tomorrow. You know, Ruth and George say, we're going to try this and we're going to, okay. Yeah, nothing ever changes. You have to make sustainable change and impact. And ripping off the Band-Aid is often difficult and complicated. And
yeah,
that's where you need to find support to do that and find the right people in your corner to make that happen. And often, Aunt Sally, who's in HR, or, you know, Uncle Johnny, who's running the books, or, you know, Cousin Harry, who's the lawyer, wrong people. But they're cheap and they're free. No, stop. Don't. No, go outside. Go find something else. Your world will change. You're not going to like it. You're going to be very upset by it, but your world will change for the better.
How much does that come down to trust? Being able to trust themselves, and so then being able to trust people outside of the family. Because my dad would say things like, well, basically, you know, at least if you're stealing from me, your family. That's kind of the way he looked at it.
If you're stealing from me, your family. Did I hear that correctly?
Say it again.
If you're stealing from me, your family. Is that what I heard you say?
It was the idea that anyone is probably going to steal from him. So at least if he had family in the seats, it was family stealing from him. So it made him feel better.
Okay. Okay. That's a problem altogether.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just sharing real life here. Just wondering, yeah. Curious yeah. if that happens to anyone else.
At least he was honest to admit to it. Most won't admit to it. Because many will put the family members all on payroll. They'll give them the dollars, but they won't expect the results out of them. So it's stealing in a sense. It's actually stealing at the end of the day. You know, we're going to pay Aunt Sally $80,000 a year, $90,000 a year, give her 6 weeks of vacation to do bookkeeping.
It's okay. Interesting that you say it that way. That is super interesting. Because there's some people that he would bring in to give jobs to that didn't necessarily earn the position. Like there were other people that were more qualified but I just see, like, what is the reason that we struggle to hire non-family members? And then from an organizational chart, it feels like everything is decision by committee and all the family members are above the line. You know, they're all in management without any kind of a structure and any kind of accountability.
Because it just morphed. When things grow, they change. You think about your kids. Infants need a different level of support and need a different level of care. Toddlers, different level of support, different level of care. Teenagers, young adults, they change. And in order to make that change, you as a parent also need to change. And too often, because we're so close to the business, we don't see that growth internally. It's just, oh, okay, great. And top line revenue may have gone 2x, 4x, 10x, 15x from when it started, but nothing else in the organization's ever changed. We're always doing it the same way. And making that business change is really important. And here's a stat for your listeners. If your family business is doing over $10 million of top line revenue, you are in the top 2% of revenue generating companies, taxable companies in the United States. You are in the top 2%. So this mentality of, well, we're only doing $10.5 million a year. We're such a small company. We only have 15 people. Stop it. Just stop it. You are a top 2%er. And you need to take some of that pride and that attitude with it versus the woe's me, everybody's against me approach. No, you are killing it and you need to act like it and behave like it and treat it as such. So that way you have that respect for your business, not just it happened overnight. And you need to have that sense of pride and passion around it and protect it. And if your family members are there screwing it up, then you got to become the parent again. You got to be that leader as far as a CEO type scenario, not dad yelling at them in the corner as you're having dinner or watching the football game. And now you're talking about, no, that's the wrong spot to have it because that's where shit goes horribly wrong.
Any more family business statistics? This is great stuff.
This came from a survey from SCORE in 2023, January 26th of 2023. The source was SCORE. 13% of family business remain in the family for over 60 years. So if you've owned that business for 50 years, it is unlikely it's going to be a very small percentage that gets through. 47% of family business owners expecting to retire in the next 5 years do not have a succession plan. They have no idea how they're getting out. And many think it's just the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I'm going to sell it. But they haven't done anything in the last 5 years to improve their business. And for your listeners, I'm going to tell you the biggest thing you need to do is pay your freaking taxes. Get to your accountant. Show revenue. Show profit. Show growth. Stop worrying about paying $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 in taxes. Because if you're getting some positive EBITDA and you can get a 1 or 2 times multiplier on that, the taxes are irrelevant. 40% of companies included younger family members on their boards or committees to nurture business and management skills. So I'm seeing a lot more small family business having those advisory boards, which include the family members with outside counsel, which is important. 1.2 million family-owned small businesses are run by a husband and wife, and they can range from two people to thousands in a Fortune 500 company.
That's amazing.
1.2 million family-owned businesses, husband and wife. So ask about those dynamics. right? And being able to take that opportunity and have that business run and then go home at the end of the day to be successful on top of it. Family businesses generate 64% of America's GDP. Family business is the economic engine of the United States. You can talk about, well, those are big companies, big pharma, big oil, big whatever. Doesn't matter. You are the backbone. At the end of the day, you are the one creating jobs. You are the one supporting your community. You are the one having an impact. And you need to take that responsibility seriously instead of complaining about, well, the schools can't give me any good people out of school. Then go get involved. Go get involved. Go do something. Go volunteer. Go be a member of your community so you can have an impact and change your path. We are in control. We are not victims here. We are in control. Let's see here. Family-owned businesses employ 60% of the workforce in the U.S. and create 78% of the jobs.
I love this. I love it.
So there's a lot of things that happen in family business, and more family businesses are out there than people think. And too often we get lost in the big brands.
Yeah.
Your local McDonald's, your local Cousin Subs, your local whatever those things are, they're all franchises. Yes, they're franchises. And yes, there's dollars going to big places, but those are families that took the time to invest in those opportunities. So don't think that, understand what the corporate stores are and what those franchise stores are in your community, and figure out how to separate which ones are which, and ask the question and support them.
Brad, what are some of the things that you would love for family business owners to know? I know you have a podcast. And so is there anything else, you know, that you really just would love to share?
Be open to change and opportunity. If you are unhappy with where you're at, many are of the age where we just, right, if they're Gen X or Boomer, we just took it. Your fate isn't sealed by decisions you made 10 years ago. There's opportunity for change every day. And I'm a huge believer of manifestation, the universe, faith, whatever you want to use, whatever language you want to use, whatever things you want to do, that if you believe it and believe it to happen, it can and will happen. You just need to be open to those walking in at the right time. If you're like, hey, we can't find good people, and you know, the 16, 17 year old kid walks in your door, banging on the door saying, hey, I'm looking for a job. Can I do something for you? Don't have the receptionist say, get out of here, kid. We don't hire kids. They took the initiative to come into your building, ask you for something. Take the time to respect that energy and find out, you know what? Yeah, I can do that. Talk to your insurance. Can I do that? Can I make that happen for this kid? Because he took the initiative. Oh, okay, cool. Because now that kid's got people in his network that's going to come through. And whether it's a 16-year-old kid, 24-year-old man, 28-year-old woman, whatever, if they took the initiative, don't just say, get out of here. Make the energy, make the effort to look for opportunities that show up in your life every day, because it's there.
I love that. And the word change is a very short word. We can say it really quickly, but actual change, I feel like, takes a little bit more stamina than
habits, right? So the tagline that I have is habits equal results, decide accordingly.
Yeah.
And habits are just small incremental steps of change that when you take and look back on the road where you were at, it's all of a sudden you're like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of what we do with our clients. It's like, well, how did we get here? How did that happen? How do we make this happen? Well, and it might not be a huge turnover of people. It might not be anything. It could just be small. We did this instead. But the biggest thing most family businesses don't do is they don't run their finances well. So
that's really interesting. I don't know that I would have known that, because my mom did a really good job and then I did a really good job.
But go get that outside support. Go get the tax advice. Go get the thing. Don't just because your accountant says, hey, I'm going to save you $6,000 in taxes, go take $60,000 in cash and go buy the new truck so you can depreciate it and not show any revenue. Well, I just got rid of $60,000 in cash and I got a truck I don't need. Show the revenue, show the growth, particularly if you're on that tail end. Go make, do just, you need to change your financial outlook on taxes versus wealth accumulation.
Mm. Well, it sounds, Brad, like you have a wealth of information and like we just got started. So I really appreciate you sharing your resources and sharing, you know, your knowledge and expertise, and excited for people to be able to connect with you as well. Is there anything else that you'd like to leave them with?
The podcast is Blue Collar BS Podcast, where we talk about multi-generational activities from both employer, employee leadership side of it. You know, if you're at that tail end and you're looking to understand what your business is worth, we do those things as well, because too often we don't know what that value is. We try to make it as painless as possible and as affordable as possible for people instead of going out to the broker. Because if you know now and you can make change, then let's make the change so you know where you can go from there. You know, we're here to support. There's lots of ways to get a hold of me on LinkedIn, my website, vfbsolutions.com. We're out there all the time talking about things, so I'm not hard to find.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it.
All right, Jamie. Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in. And to stay in touch, email us at info@businessaddictspodcast.com.